want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You wanna. Do you want a podcast? Do you want a show? Do you get your laughs from computer radio with this bro, Scotty Mo? It's about time to lose your shit. Everybody's progress clips for that legend, Kevin Smith.
Welcome to Smodcast. I'm Kevin Smith. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, what are you doing with your life? You know, it's a question that we get asked when we're kids, particularly in that old video for Twisted Sister. What are you going to do with your life? The guys, drill sergeant dads yelling at the kid and stuff. It's a question that a lot of us take for granted because life happens all the time and you realize at a certain age, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life because my life is in process. It's happening and stuff. So a lot of us forget that, time is precious because we're so busy doing the standard day to day. A couple months ago, we had on the show an incredible guest in an episode entitled John from Australia. John Grayson, who is dealing with terminal illness, kind of reframed life for us beautifully. And it was a powerful episode. And back then I said, hey, we're going to talk again. So we are going to talk again. John Grayson is the living example of not taking it for granted. And last time we chit-chatted, we got to hear how he's spending his time. So with such limited time, it's a precious gift that he's sharing any of it with us. So that means you want to open up your ears and listen clearly, man, because you're going to hear some true wisdom. You know, wisdom comes from somebody with experience that you don't have. John is living an experience right now that mercifully most of us, for all we know, are not going through. So how do we learn about the unknown? By speaking to those who challenge the unknown, who head into it, who deal with the unknown, who live in the unknown and the uncertain future. So back to talk about life is our friend from Australia, John Grayson. John, you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, how are you?
Welcome back, Captain. I asked you before we started, but for those listening in, just to lean us into where you are, how are things down under?
Very wet for the last, last 2 months, 2 weeks or so, but it's finally starting to get a dry up. So it's finally getting, finally about to get dry for a change.
Fantastic. So, yeah. Okay. So just to refresh the memories of those who were listening before, or maybe for those who are listening for the first time, what are you dealing with? What is creating your terminal condition?
So I have a brain cancer, is the short version of it. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed in 2014, and it's now at the point where it's inoperable and it's weeks to months to live with.
And, to refresh the memory of those, from the last episode or those who perhaps didn't listen to the last episode, when you were given the initial diagnosis, you were told a certain amount of time that you've long since passed, correct?
Yeah. So when I was originally diagnosed, I had essentially two to 5 years. That was now 6 years that I've gone to. Diagnosis, is, like I said, it's now at 6 years. And the reason why it's now specifically terminal is because it's inoperable because I've got a secondary tumor that's within the actual brain itself that's like I said, it's completely inoperable and it's you can't do anything with it. So there's nothing that can be done. That's why it's, like I said, within weeks or months.
So you beat the original odds, but now more recently they told you it's the brain cancer's in a position in the brain, deep in the brain, where we can't. It's inoperable at this point. And so they,
exactly.
And so that's when they tell you, like, okay, now for real, you're looking at weeks and or months. So we, you know, most of us, of course, dread that moment. And you had, you know, you're no different. I'm sure you dreaded it as well, but you also had time building up to it. And it's an extended moment, you know, one that's lasted now like 6 years since somebody was just like, okay, here's the bad news. So your perspective on the world, on life, is uniquely different from most of the folks, if not everybody, listening right now. So for those listening at home who are like, okay, what would I do if I knew my time was limited? If my days were numbered, and you know, the sad truth is all of our days are numbered. Most people just don't spend their time thinking about it. But for people who are kind of putting themselves in your position right now and going like, what would I do? What have you been doing since the last time we spoke? How have you been using the time?
Play with a little Lego. It's really weird is that you still do the same shit that you do every day. So in many, like, that's the kind of crazy thing is that you do still the same sort of stuff. That is kind of the really weird thing is that you don't do.
It's not a movie. Like, you know, if they make a movie of this, somebody goes on around the world trip, falls in love, saves an animal, you know, falls into treasure. Like, they go on the adventure of a lifetime. But what you're saying is the day to day.
I mean, I can only speak for me, but I still end up doing the same stupid shit that I do every other day. So occasionally I'll watch dumb. Like, I know I've only got a finite time, really a finite time.
Right.
But I still occasionally will watch some stupid show that's on TV for 30 minutes on like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example, but I can't even think of what it's called. The one where doesn't matter, but like I'll watch some stupid TV show because it's on,
right?
Just because it's showing, and even though I know I've got finite time, but it's just because it's there, and I've got, you know, 30 minutes to kill.
You don't. That's the thing. You don't have.
But I don't.
30 minutes to kill. I'm telling you right now. Yeah. Every TV network who's listening is like, oh my God, I hope he said our show. It would be amazing if he said our show. Cause what a huge review that would be. Like, this guy's got.
I can literally think of the TV show that I'm thinking of, but I can't think.
You certainly don't have to. But the point being, I mean, you're graded on a curve here, John. You're dealing with brain cancer. But the notion, I think, that like, you know, TV, movies, they're defined as escapism. And, you know, who more than you at this point needs a momentary respite or escape from the real world? As limited as the time is, I'm sure 30 minutes of a dumb show comes in at just like the right time. It's just what the doctor ordered. And then you move on with your life. So do you watch movies still?
Movies, yes. So funnily enough, that's actually probably what I watch more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, if anything, I've actually turned or I've watched less, TV shows now. Like I used to, let's say 3 years ago or mm-hmm. so, I would have watched a lot more television TV series. But I've come to the realization that I can't watch a lot of TV series now because even if they don't watch on a end on a cliffhanger.
On a cliffhanger.
Yeah, yeah. even if they don't end on a cliffhanger, a lot of those things will be coming up next season, you still need to know what's coming up, type of something. And a lot of those is like, well, I can't watch next season. I can't watch that anymore. So a lot of those types of stuff, I don't really want to watch that because it's like kind of, I don't really watch it, basically.
Right. I like, be able to watch it. Quit rubbing it in, man. You're telling me there's going to be another season. I don't know if I'm going to be
able to. Exactly. Yeah. So with that in mind, I don't watch a lot of TV stuff as much. I typically will want to watch movies because I know it's finite and it's going to finish. And so that's like, I found that's where I'm finding a lot more enjoyable stuff that I'm finding a lot more pleasurable because I know that I don't need to tune in for next season.
Now, here's a question about the movies. Do you do you rewatch movies that you've seen a bunch, or is it all new from here on in?
I've actually found that I've been watching a lot of really crappy. Well, not even I don't want to say crappy, but I've been finding a lot of been watching a lot of movies. Like recently, I watched Fletch, and I've watched I've been watching a lot of basically 80s and 90s and stuff that I've watched before that I hadn't watched for a while. And I'm like, I haven't seen that for a while. I'm going to go back and watch that again and see. And I'm thinking that this has been a really stupid thing because I'm like, oh, I remembered that was really good. And then I'm like, wasn't really that good. Or actually the one that I particularly watched was 48 hours and 48 hours. And I don't remember having so much racism.
Yes, rampant racism.
Holy yeah, and like, holy crap. that was a lot worse than I thought it was.
They got away with a lot more back then.
Yeah, they really did.
So what, when you're not watching stuff, how are you spending the day? What are you doing? There's no job anymore, right? So you don't have to worry about that.
No, I haven't worked for quite some while. So because of my brain cancer and all the rest of that, it really is day to day and even then hour to hour. And especially over about the last couple of weeks, my nerve pain and has sort of increased in a couple of times. So over the last, say, about the last 2 weeks, my pain has sort of been, comes and goes occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly, I was given morphine as one of my pain management so that I can take.
Right.
And most of the time I haven't been able to, haven't needed that. But now over about the last 2 weeks, occasionally I've had to take that about once or twice, or three times or whatever. It hasn't been many. But the point is I've now had to occasionally use the morphine.
Right.
And so while it's not very often, it's like, oh, geez, I'm at pain. No, I've got pain now and I need to get rid of the pain. So I need to go and take the morphine. And the reason I'm sort of bringing all that up is it's this whole process of what is going on at the moment and how do I get rid of it? And
right.
So at the particular moment, it might be with the pain. And I sort of, this whole process of day by day, hour by hour type sort of thing is it either pain or if it may not be pain, but it might be something else, it might be, can I move in the same way that I can, or am I, you know, whatever the symptom is that I'm having, I need to deal with that particular issue at the moment. Most of the time, it's fine. Most of the time, I'm just sort of sitting down or standing up or whatever. That it's just really take it as it goes.
And for the morphine ignorant like myself, how quickly does it work? Like is it a pill?
No, it's a liquid that you swallow.
Oh, fantastic. So does it, is it act faster then if it's a liquid that one swallows? And so,
so
an onset of pain comes on, you to go to the morphine, how long before the pain then subsides or the morphine does what it's supposed to do?
Within 5 minutes, if that.
Oh, well, that's
really quick.
There's something positive about that. Very positive, particularly like, you know, that in that moment, I imagine. And pain, is it in your head or in your body?
It's a tricky sort of thing to say where it is. It's in the head, but it's sort of one of those questions that's sort of like, where is it in the head?
Right.
And there's sort of one of those things. I think there's a sort of a bit of a joke or whatever that says Inuits have a 400 words for snow or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a bit like myself with how many different words are there for brain pain.
Right.
And I was trying to sort of think about this the other day because I had a headache, but it wasn't a headache, but it was still pain in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to sort of describe it is it's not like a pain that you have like a headache, but it's more like a pressure.
Yes.
It's just have pressure in your head, but it's totally different to what you would have a headache. It's really weird. It's almost as though, imagine you've got someone's crushing your skull inwards, except it's going the other way. It's pushing outwards. Ugh. So it's as though everything's being pushed outwards from your head, outwards. And everything's pushing backwards, which is why one of the drugs that they give you is to reduce the pressure in the skull. So that's also then essentially what eventually kills you is that your pressure in your skull gets too big and you can't do anything else about it. And that's why I'm terminal, because they can't stop the pressure in the brain at the same time. So it's also related to it.
Man, oh man. Like I know you're used to it because these are, this is terminology and, you know, a diagnosis you've been living with a long time and stuff. But when you, like, hear it, it's just, it sounds excruciating from out here. I'm sure it must be excruciating as it happens, hence the morphine and stuff. But how do you keep, I mean, you know, granted we're only talking for a limited time, so it's like there's a window that one could remain cheery, but I suspect that you're always as cheery as you sound. How does one remain that way with like a war going on inside your head?
There's sort of two things at once. One is that I'm used to it. Mm. I've known this for 6 years. So I'm used to, it's sort of strange. You're only hearing this now, more or less, but I've known this for 6 years. So, from my perspective, it's old news, and which is always like the first time I heard the news, I didn't know anything, and then I probably went through all the five stages, I'm sure, but it would have been relatively quick, and then keeping from, if we go back from the previous episode of this podcast, the fact that I already had the anxiety and depression, I had already gone through that. So in many ways that would have gave me a understanding of how to deal with the anxiety and depression, that type sort of thing, in terms of this as well.
Mm.
So that gave me a sort of, for lack of a better word, a gift, I guess. I don't know. That's not a good way of putting it, but I don't know how the best way to put it. But I knew how to deal with anxiety.
Right.
And so that's sort of one part of it. And then the other part was I sort of used the knowledge that I picked up from the of to understand what was going on, because I'm sort of a bit nerdy, to be able to use that to sort of deal with it. So I sort of used the I don't know how else to put it, but I was able to deal with the sort of the mental, what would have probably have made me upset, by trying to figure out it from the perspective of what the hell is going on, from in terms of like literally on the sort of the brainy type sort of thing. Like I wanted to know what was actually literally going on in my brain,
right?
And that made me understand it better to be able to then deal with it better, if that makes sense.
It does, absolutely. So you hit it, on a clinical level, you were just like, all right, well, let me understand this. And it
exactly.
In part, that demystifies it and hence makes it, I guess, I mean, I don't know if the word is easier, but like it makes, it enables you to kind of put it into a perspective, but like there is no perspective for this. Like, you know, for somebody who hasn't walked in your shoes or been dealing with this for 6 years, you know, it's just one of those things of like, no, it can't end, and you can't know that it's going to end because the rest of us don't live like that, or we don't think we do. But sooner or later, you know, if you dodge accidents and stuff in everybody's life, there is a period of time where somebody's like, okay, you should really start putting your stuff together. I just don't know that I would be able to be kind of gracious about it. Like you're so generous with it, you know, and about the thing that's inside your head. Is that come from the studying of it and hence understanding it a little more?
Maybe. I think it's sort of a few different things. I think it's mostly, I think it's mostly the fact that I sort of had looked at for the last 6 years or so. I think it's also because that if not anyone else than me, or if not me, then who else? In the sense that because I had the ability to do this, probably that's the best way I could put it. I had the ability to speak sort of to some extent. Maybe I can't speak.
No, what I'm getting at is,
yeah, but if I was able to sort of speak to other people and say, hey, you guys, this is what's going on with me, and I'm willing to tell people about it, then I figured why not let people know about it. And that was sort of what I wanted. And that's why I went on You Can't Ask That originally, way back when, because I figured, why the hell not, type sort of thing.
Right. What about who's in your life right now? You're surrounded by family?
Yeah, so I live with my mom, and I've been living there for quite a while now. And she's my primary care as well. So she doesn't like a lot of the sort of, like, she doesn't want drugs and stuff because I can't do that.
Right.
So, among other things.
And are there other people? Do you have extended family? And are people coming from, like, to come see you and stuff?
Yeah, I've got two brothers. One of them lives quite close, and the other one lives in a different state. But yeah, the one that lives quite close, he's within, about 4 minutes drive, and sort of drive away type sort of thing. Like, he's really close, so he comes around pretty much. He's a school teacher, and he often comes after school and picks drives after school, and then sort of has a cup of tea and comes over. So yeah, so we see each other quite regularly.
Where are you with spirituality on the whole thing? Are you a God person? Not a God person?
I am. I'm not religious myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a, what's the word? I live and let live type sort of person.
Right.
So
you allow for other people's beliefs.
Yes, exactly. So I have a friend, for instance, that is actually have quite, now I'm thinking about it, have quite a few members, quite a few friends that are of many different beliefs and all the rest of it. So I'm a live and live type. So personally, I'm not religious in any particular way.
With the diagnosis going back 6 years, did the religious people come out of the woodwork? Did people start, having God talks with you?
All my friends and stuff didn't. All of them, they would have known what was going on. The people that don't know me, on the other hand, mm-hmm. most of them, most people were pretty good. The people that were the most annoying of all of that types of stuff were random strangers that that wanted to give me cure your cancer with either not even so much religion, but mostly, and no offense or nothing on this one, Kevin, but a lot of people wanted to cure my cancer with marijuana and stuff like that.
Is that so right?
There was a lot of people like, you can cure cancer with this and all that. So I'm like, it's like, guys, that doesn't work like that.
Right.
It's a lot more problematic than that.
I'm beyond Rick Simpson oil at this point. That was the that's what they love to recommend for cancer patients, Rick Simpson oil, which is insanely concentrated and has shown efficacy in some places, but
absolutely.
What you're dealing with is like you said, it's just you're beyond that at this point.
Yeah, there's definitely actual science in stuff around that. It's just what the people that are doing that versus what the actual science is totally different.
Right. Yes. I smoke a lot of weed. I would not consider myself a scientist by any stretch of the imagination. in your mind, what happens when it's over? Where are you going to go?
Well, I've always thought that there is, it's the exact same question of what happened before you,
right?
Before you were born, it's that there is no after, it's just an empty nothingness, basically. So it's the same sort of question of what happened before you were born, nothingness. That's my sort of interpretation, which a lot of people might find that sort of horribleness or whatever, but.
No, I remember on this very show years ago, Smodcast, Mosier was talking about, the end. And I'd been raised Catholic. If you listen to the history of this show, and I'm not recommending this for John, you got limited time. Do not listen to every episode of Smodcast. But for those who do, there was a time when, I think when we started, I was still holding on to the last vestiges of my faith that I was raised in childhood and whatnot. And, Scott, particularly when it came to the notion of death, and Scott had put it quite simply, and it always stuck with me, and it still stays with me today. Mosier's take on the end was like, well, it's like a computer. Because I was like, how could I just end? How could it just be nothingness? There's got to be something after this, because I learned so much and all this experience and stuff. And he's like, well, you're like a laptop. He's like, you put a lot of information on a laptop and all you do is store it with information. He's going, but then one day, what happens to the laptop when it winds down? He's like, that's all that information. That's it. It's just done. And it hit me so poorly when he said it, but it's been, oh God, over a decade, I think. And I'm starting to think I'm starting to think he's more right than what they told me in Catholic school. That's starting to sound like a lot of bullshit. What do you want to do now with, let's go for months, the months you've got left?
Mm-hmm. So one major thing is I want to finish this damn bloody, So I've been working on a Lego mosaic. If you know what a Lego mosaic is,
absolutely
great. And if you don't know what it is, I've been making a artwork piece, which is basically I'm trying to figure out how to describe it. So it's going to be quite large. It's going to look like a piece of art that you're going to mount up on a wall, and it's made out of Lego pieces. Mm-hmm. It's made for my psychologist that I've been seeing since I was diagnosed with my brain heads.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an ongoing thing for about the last couple of almost probably now a couple of months now. And it's just basically just been this crazy sort of thing that I've been trying to, I thought it was going to be finished about probably a month ago. Mm-hmm. And it still hasn't been finished yet because of just issues. So one of the things that I want to do is finish that damn thing up.
Do you build it? You said it is eventually be a wall hanging, but do you build it on a table like normal Lego and eventually just seal it and then it gets hung?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's like I said, that's a work in progress. And hopefully be finished within about either next week or next month. It'll be one or the other.
Nice.
Hopefully the next week. The other sort of other thing that I'm sort of going on is I'm still sort of in the process of getting downgrading a lot of all my stuff.
Right. As you talked about, for those that maybe aren't following, on the last episode, John was talking about like one of the hidden aspects of facing a terminal diagnosis is what do I do with all my stuff? And John didn't want to leave it for his mom to have to disperse in his absence. So he has taken to giving it away now. That's been one of his activities. So where are you at in that?
So one of like basically breaking down my things into breaking down my stuff into stuff.
Right.
I had board games, video games, to the comic books and then basically another crap. The board games are basically, I've gotten rid of most of that, almost all of those actually, which is pretty good. It sucks, but it's also pretty good.
Right.
There's a few of those that are still floating around, but I should give a shout out to a friend of mine, Richard. He's basically did a lot of that because he sort of was helping a friend of he was helping give a lot of those to that, and he was doing like all the legwork for all that. Oh,
my picture went out.
Yeah, that's fine. I can still hear me though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Anyway,
yeah. So he was doing a lot of that work. And then the all the other stuff is still in work in progress, but still going pretty good. I lost my train of thought now. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. So the other stuff that I've been doing has basically you do a month to month. So that's sort of what's pretty much what I've been doing for the last month. In terms of the next month, I don't really look at the next month after.
Right.
Because frankly, I don't know what's going on with that next month.
That's what everybody's like, oh, I'm not thinking about next month. I got to deal with this month.
No, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be next month. If I sort of go backwards on the clock on that type sort of thing, my original when I was originally diagnosed recently, if I can word it that way,
right?
I was told that because I hate chemo. I mean, chemo's great and it works really well, but I hate chemo.
Hate it in the way that it just makes you nauseous and all the after effects.
Yeah, all that stuff, exactly. And so I was somewhat hesitant about going on chemo.
Mm-hmm.
And like again, basically. And when, to put it bluntly, I'm not going to word it exactly the same way that the doctor described or put it, but you'll get the general gist.
Okay.
And he said, if you don't go on chemo again, you'll be dead in 3 weeks. And that was basically how he thought. Now, that was in January.
Right.
He said, if you don't go back on that again, you'll be dead in 3 weeks. And it's now, what is it?
We're in March. We're almost in April.
Yeah. And that's because I've been on chemo since that time. Because the chemo that I'm on at the moment is called TMZ, and it's particularly good for end stage brain cancer. And it sucks, right. And I don't particularly like chemo, but it's particularly, like, it's been working, obvious. In fact, I literally said that the other day to the doctor. He asked how are you going or something along those lines. And I said, well, obviously it's working because I'm still alive.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, fair enough.
And it's like, and he's the one with the medical degree. What do you dream about? Like, not like dream about doing, like literally when you go to sleep, what do you dream about at this point?
These days I don't. I used to dream all the time. Besides having brain cancer, I also had narcolepsy.
Is that right?
And yeah, actually a bit of a fun side to that is, because I was originally diagnosed with narcolepsy before I was diagnosed with the brain cancer. It was about 12 months before I was diagnosed with the brain cancer.
Mm.
There is a question, and because my brain cancer is on the left-hand side, left-hand side, there is a question about whether or not there's a link.
Between narcolepsy and brain cancer.
Well, maybe only in the sense that no one knows if there's any link at all.
Right.
But because for me specifically, my brain cancer is particularly odd. Like it's very odd. It was originally diagnosed as doesn't matter because I'm not going to be able to remember the word. Ganglioglioma. Hey, there we go.
No, nice.
Which, now, a ganglioglioma is particularly rare of brain cancer.
Mm.
And my version of that was a grade 3 at the time. So it was the upshot of it all being is the best way, think of it like a great big blob of mess of your cancer, and it's all jumbled up. It's almost like a thick shape. So it's all being mixed up in. Normally, sorry about that.
No worries.
Normally, you have a cancer, and it's relatively nice and clean, and you have sort of one over here and one over there. But on mine, it was all mixed together.
Right.
And part of that is the means that my particular cancer, the ganglioglioma, is the ganglion. It's literally the way it says. So the ganglions and the glions are all mixed in together. So with that in mind, go back to what the what was going on with my
narcolepsy.
Is when I was pre-diagnosed, or when they realized that I had both the narcolepsy and the brain cancer, is they were wondering if there was a link between the two, because the type of tumor that I had mixes everything together.
Right.
And now there is not enough information at all for them to know is there a link. But what they did do was basically the doctor from the sleep clinic, who's actually a professor, he basically had been charged, making notes for the last 6 years or whatever. And then also my brain, all the other, everyone, doesn't matter. Everyone has basically been sort of comparing notes, right, because they don't know, they can't say, oh yes, there's a link, but they can say, this is interesting, and we need to make sure if there is a link, then next time around, like basically when I'm dead,
right,
then they'll go, oh, if there's another person that comes along and has the same sort of thing, then they'll go, oh, there is a link here, and they can have a next time around. So yeah, I'm a thingy of one. Subject of one.
Is it a control group of one?
So control group of one, exactly.
How close does one get with the doctors? Like the doctor was like, if you don't do this, you're going to be gone in 3 weeks or whatever. Like, are you allowed to be close with the doctors, or they kind of keep their professional distance? Because unlike most, you know, patient care, I would imagine this is patients that need the most care, not just physically, but also like bedside manner.
From what I've found, most doctors actually want to be as very, I don't want to say cold, but very clinical is probably the right way to put it. So most of the doctors want to be as very, yeah, clinical is the best way to put it. So they want to not want to have any emotion.
Emotion.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, the emotion. Whereas the brain cancer, the Mark Hughes Foundation people that I mentioned in the previous episode, they help quite a lot more, and they have a lot more emotional support and all that types of stuff going on because I speak to them on a more regular basis. Whereas the doctors, I might speak to them, especially if you might change doctors. It might not be necessarily the doctor. It might be seeing the under doctor type, sort of, the doctor that's not the actual doctor, but the
specialist or something.
Yeah, or the other one, the one that's the doctor that's the
narcolepsy guy,
yeah, and stuff like that, and then also the doctors that are, yeah, your lucky doctor, the doctor that's not the actual doctor, but the one that's, yeah,
the intern,
your intern doctor and stuff like that. Yeah,
I don't exactly watch enough Grey's Anatomy to be able to throw out my hospital terms quickly.
That helps with stuff. Yeah.
What is that's another thing? Like when it comes to like, for the last 6 years, I imagine you don't really watch doctor shows or doctor movies because, like, you live in a constant doctor show and doctor movie.
Not so much. I mean, not so much that I don't watch it. It's just that it doesn't. It's like, that's wrong. That's wrong. That's not right.
Right.
Especially from an Australian point of view, it's like, why are you guys asking about how much it's going to cost? What are you talking about?
Right.
How much is this going to cost? Nothing. Right. It's going to cost nothing. Like, especially from my perspective, like, didn't cost anything. It's a different world perspective from Australia versus from America.
Oh, my God. Well, you just made one of the greatest commercials of all time for Australia simply by reminding people that, like, the bill isn't something you have to think about. And I imagine for like 6 years, and you're talking about brain surgeons and people who specialists, it would be so expensive over here. But there, the government takes care of all of it?
Pretty much, wow. Yeah. It's one of the things that I always just reminds me of how lucky it is to live in Australia is just how much went up, because I've got a couple of relatives that live in America, and I've got one of my relatives has cancer as well. He has It's a cancer. Can't remember the type of cancer. Oh,
lymph node.
When blood. When you can't. When you've got. I think what's called off the top of my head.
Me neither.
But yeah, when you've got. But regardless, type of cancer. But they even have.
Is that leukemia?
I think they have
leukemia.
Leukemia. Thank you. Yes, exactly. And they have, as far as I'm aware, actually have, money,
insurance.
When you have insurance, yes, exactly. And even that, they still have to pay for.
You can have wonderful insurance, but there's still some, you know, money that you have to put in on your own. They call it deductible. Like you have to put in a certain amount yourself.
That's craziness. Whereas with me, like one of the things that I basically haven't paid for anything, including going to doctors and all the doctors and going to the about the only thing I've had to pay for is my drugs for which because I was on a low pension was like $6 for my regular drug.
I think it's safe to say it's absolutely safe to say that by living in Australia, you have lived longer than you probably would have if you were here in America. Like, especially,
I think that's probably safe.
Especially with a system that's just like, we got the bill, don't worry about it. The healthcare there sounds exceptional, and you're living proof, for heaven's sakes. What are you allowed to drive anymore or no?
No, I haven't driven for now years.
It's been a minute.
But sort of like, hey, you can drive. No, you can't.
What do you get to go out? Like, do you still go walking and stuff like that?
I go out on. I basically can't walk very well.
Right.
I have a walk-in walker or whatever they call
like
it.
My mom's got one of those, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I can use that for sort of limited space.
Mm.
And then one of the things that I have is a social friend person. I don't know what they're called. But basically I go out with him every 2 weeks, 2 days a week. Which basically just helps keep me more sane.
Right.
Which is kind of cool.
Where do you guys go?
Just basically anywhere. It doesn't really matter. So we either go to the shops or we just go for a drive to the beach or whatever's bored and like whatever we want to do for basically 2 hours.
Nice.
We'll go to the movies or whatever. So essentially just to get out of the house more than anything. Keeps mum a bit more sane, keeps me a bit more sane, just sort of keeps everyone a bit more sane,
right.
Essentially. To just to literally get out of the house is the main reason, sort of rather than just being.
I think a lot of people identify with, they can't identify with where you are specifically, but a lot of us have been in the house for the last year and would welcome somebody who's like, let's go out for 2 hours. Like, yes, that'd be amazing again. For those, listening, for the last, let's say 3% of the folks listening, who are still like, I got to worry about all this ridiculous shit that people normally worry about and stuff. Hit them with a little insight and a little wisdom. What should people be doing with their time, John?
Good question. I think probably the best thing you should be doing is stop worrying about the shit that no one needs to worry about, which sounds really, really important. But there's a lot of people seem to be worrying about a lot of stuff that they don't need to worry about. And I can probably add to that. Doesn't anyone really care about... I mean, maybe this is just me, but I don't... Does that random person on say, Reddit or any other website that you've never met before does that particular person really worry going to leave a nasty website, nasty word thing?
Comment.
Going to get comment or dislike or whatever. Like, is that going to come into your life in any way, shape or form? Just let it go. And then more to the point, is leaving the comment going to help as well? Like, again, just let it go. Is typing it or messaging or on Facebook or the rest of it? A lot of people like, I need to reply to this person because I need to let them know that they're wrong or that I'm right or about this thing. And I'm like, the amount of crap in Twitter or in Facebook or in this about I'm wrong and you're right about this particular thing on this random person about this particular subject. And most of the time, really? I don't get it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm the person that I don't, I'm out of this perspective on this one, but.
If everybody, if there was a time stamp on our forehead that counted down to the moment that we end, there'd be a lot less sitting on the internet going, you're absolutely wrong about this. I mean, you're living with a metaphorical version of that. So you see the preciousness of time and going like that ain't any way that I want to spend my time and no way that anybody else should be wasting so much time on it. I mean, it's created crisis for one's life. You're absolutely right. How often does a negative comment somebody leaves really come into the real world? It's in a non-world, for heaven's sakes, an interdimensional little portal where people post opinions and look at pornography and stuff like that. But it really, doesn't, unless somebody's swatting your house or something, it really doesn't haunt you into your true life.
Exactly.
Important lesson right there. What is the, do you even go on the internet anymore?
I do. Most of the time I'm on the internet, it'll be one of two things. Either if I'm specifically messaging people that I know in real life, or if I'm specifically messaging people on Reddit to talk about, you can't ask that. Those are the two main things that I'll do. Beyond that, generally, it's not that I don't go on the internet or anything. I do. It's just that I try to do it specifically for real. Like I said, I'll talk to people on say Facebook, but I'll be talking to people on Facebook that I know in real life and stuff like that. Very, very rarely would I be on the internet that I don't know anyone in real life or anything like that. That would be really, in fact, I can't even think of anyone off the top of my head.
What finally, what makes you happy right now? Like for me, when I'm like, oh man, the day was hard. You know what's going to make it better? I'm going to eat this Beyond Burger, which is like, most people go for alcohol or whatever the fuck. But what is your happy place? Like where? What is the thing you get to go to where you're like, oh yes, this is it. Like this is an excellent use of my time. And I can put aside all the thoughts, of all the things I need to do before my time or whatever. What's your happy place right now? Cause you gave your games away, motherfucker. Like you can't, it ain't your games. They're gone for heaven's sakes.
That's a tricky question. I'm trying to think about that one.
For me, it would be nonstop, constant masturbation. That would be my happy place. That's how they'd find me. That's, you know, it, that might, if they took me out for 2 hours every once in a while in a week, that's all I'd be doing in the car. Just getting as many in as I possibly can. But that's me. I'm selfish like that. What is your happy place?
I don't know. I mean, I do like my food, but I don't think I like my food that much.
I'll be honest with you. I like food so much that, like, in a choice between food and fucking, sometimes I'm just like, well, one is going to be over very fast. The other I can make stretch out for like a half an hour, you know, sometimes an hour. I sit down in front of the TV to watch a TV show that's like an hour long. The meal is an hour long. I just keep it going throughout the entire thing, grazing like a damn cow. So, yeah.
Good food.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's repeated trips to the kitchen, too. That's the sad thing. It's just like becomes a buffet in bed and stuff, which is the only place one will have a buffet anymore at home. Like, you know, because good Lord, nobody's going to be having buffets in the age of COVID and whatnot. The idea of like, let's all reach into the same pot just doesn't really play quite the same anymore. But I digress. So food is a happy place. What else?
I don't think there's one specific thing that is a particular person, particular thing that is a happy place. I think it's more of a case of things that are happy versus things that are not happy is probably the best way to put it.
Mm.
So a happy place for me at the moment would be essentially if I'm able to do what I want to do, and I'm pain free, and I'm enjoying whatever it is that I'm doing. So it could be something, I could be talking to a friend of mine, or I could be watching a TV or a movie or whatever the thing is that I'm doing. And in particular, if I'm doing it and I'm not having to sort of think about it, if I'm just in the moment, that would be probably, funnily enough, would be the happiness in the fact that I can do it without actually concentrate. Whereas let's say I'm watching a movie and I go two hours and haven't had the thought about, oh, hang on, I've got some sort of pain going for the last 2 hours. That would be not a happy place, but if I've gone for 2 hours and then that would then be a happy place, if that makes sense.
That makes absolute sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the best way I could describe it is if a happy place for me would be a long stretch of time where I haven't had to think about shit, basically. And that could be, like I said, it could be anything. Could be anything from movies to talking to people. Doesn't matter. Yeah, that'd be it.
I think you just poetically described everybody's happy place, man. You just put us all on the same damn page and whatnot. Once again, inspiring, wonderful words from somebody with a healthy dose of perspective, man. We will do this again. What's the date today? Today is March 29th, so let me look at this calendar here. Let's do this again on April 15th. Sound good?
I'll have to double check my calendar, but should sound about good to me.
Yeah, we'll go for that, man, mid-month, because we can't be taking John for granted, kids. Can't be like, all right, we'll talk to you next month. You know, doctors are telling us things as John has communicated. So we'll treat that time preciously. And instead of waiting a big chunk of time, we'll get back together on April 15th. Julian will put it in my calendar and we'll do this again, man. And you'll tell us what's happened between now and that moment as well. Do me a favor, go out and live an adventure so you can come back and be like, I fought a bear, for Christ's sakes. It was fucking nuts. Barehanded.
I've already been to Antarctica, so
that's true. You're like, what fucking more adventure you want from me? Fuck. He's like, I set him in the end stages. God damn it, get off my balls. Once again, a privilege and an honor, man. Excellent talk.
Go on, go find a bear.
We'll talk to you in mid-April again, John. But continued success in beating the odds, man.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Thanks for your time. As precious as it is for you to give us, not just the last time we sat down, but then this time as well. And then the time I just fucking committed you to in mid-April and stuff. You feel free at any time to be like, I did mention I'm dying, right? Like, what the fuck? You're asking me about time and then you're stealing it from me, for heaven's sakes. Feel free to let me know at any time if I overstay my welcome and stuff. But you are a unique bird. I don't know anybody else like you. And I think it's important for the rest of us to hear your voice, because I think you're going a place that a lot of us, particularly my age, think about a lot more regularly at this point and stuff. So if with your permission, we'll keep it going.
Well, good. Thank you very much. And we'll talk soon.
We will. That is Smodcast for this week, kids. I'm Kevin Smith.
And I'm Stanley John Grace.
Well done. You got to excuse him. You just listen to the episode. You know what we're talking about. Have a week.
This podcast has been produced exclusively for members of ThatKevinSmithClub.com.